Caught in the dark with a radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You are listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Hello and welcome back to Where the Most Light Falls. I didn't have a show in October because I was traveling to Ireland, where I gave a poetry reading at a place called O'Bell, a wonderful poetry venue in Cork City. It is held at the Long Valley Bar, and that was on October the 10th, and I had just a wonderful time. I'm so grateful to Paul Casey and everyone there who were a generous, receptive audience. So for the November show, I think it's going to be special. I have decided to do some guest readings, and I'll have some of my friends reading their own work as well as reading some of my work, and I'll tell you more about that a little bit later. For now, let's get started listening to some beautiful music. This is a selection of songs on piano by Roy Todd. It's a live performance. It's called Seasons. Let's begin today's readings with a few poems by Christine Tabaka. Anne Christine Tabaka lives in Delaware. She's a published poet and artist. She loves gardening and cooking. Chris lives with her husband and two cats. Her most recent credits are in the Paragon Journal, The Literary Hatchet, The Meta Worker, Raven Cage E-Zine, Raven's Perch, Anapest Journal, Mused, Apricity Magazine, Longshot Island, Indiana Voice Journal, and Halcyon Days Magazine. This is her poem, The Forest Calls. Eerie, yet calm and peaceful, the forest at night calls to me. It draws me in. The quiet surrounds me. It is as if I can hear the trees breathe. I use touch to find my way. Feeling the bark becomes my braille. It shares its stories. How many have walked this way before? Will the trees give up their secrets? The silver moonlight trickles down between the leaves like rays of glory, breaking through the darkness. I become one with the woods. I am home. The second poem is called The Garden. I tire of the cold and rain. The garden calls to me. lonely and forlorn, it awaits my arrival, lovingly inviting me in. Pots of tender seedlings, excited to be planted in perfect rows, some demanding to be placed randomly in an array of beautiful chaos. Kneeling, the soft earth gives in and hugs my tired old legs, lovingly cushioning my way as I move from plant to plant. I place my fingers deep into welcoming earth. The soil remembers me, giving way to my hands, opening up to receive the soft roots. The sun warms my back. Bees greet me along the way, alighting on each newly planted treat. Birds serenade from the branches above. Time passes too fast as my labor of love continues on. The garden smiles back at me. It is good to be with my old friend again. Next, I'd like to share a poem by Linda Embler. Linda is the author of the published poetry collection Big Questions, Little Sleep. Her work has appeared in numerous journals. Linda's creative process and a current complete listing of sites which have or will publish her work can be found at lindaspoetryblog.blogspot.com. This writer, yoga practitioner, and classical guitar player lives in Wichita, Kansas. Let's enjoy her poem called Atop the Hill. I see much from my place atop the hill. Harried mothers squawking, old men numb with loneliness, laced lovers convinced of privacy. There are no windows here to close, no way to mute. All things are present to me, and I long for forgetfulness. The sky, alternately dark, then light, it makes no difference here. My eyes catch some movement, I spend all time the same way. Seeing footprints in the snow, seeing sweat dripping from hot bodies, each season has its own true stamp, watching them all rotate through the years. Across generations, I observe similar human actions. Familiar, they seldom change their style, going about their day's business. Perhaps someone will come relieve me, but as centuries pass, I realize there is still no window, yet I hear and see from atop the hill. As you were listening to this reading of Linda's wonderful poem, you may have heard in the background the sweet cry of my old cat. Her name is L.A. It stands for Lucky Angel. She has lived with me for probably 16 or 17 years. She's a very old and tender cat. And lately she has taken to crying in a way that is unlike her former cries. They are deeper, wider, louder. And I wonder if she is giving her last consummate poetry reading. Next, we will be listening to a poem called Where Will Your Friends Take You by Ace Bajas, as well as another poem or two from the Sourland Mountain Review, Volume 1.2, where Ace's poem is published. You've heard me speak of Ace before. The co-editors of the Sauerland Mountain Review are Julia Van Middlesworth and Lauren Gostella. The poetry editor has the wonderful name of Flower Conroy. Check them out online, the Sauerland Mountain Review. Here's the poem, Where Will Your Friends Take You? Facebook ad is the subtitle, by Ace Bodges. Places at daybreak where no one waits in line. The amusement rides are gravestones. We count the names, but seldom speak them. This is our history lesson, our colorful journey of imaginings. This, a world that welcomes silence, the altogether stillness. The second poem I'd like to share from that wonderful journal is called On the Mountain by Stephen Klaptar. Listen. There is a tongue on the mountain that crawled out of a grave. All the way up, it tasted dirt and stones. It bled and left shards of itself along the trail. It licks the peak, a damaged, wordless thing. I have listened in the night to my grandmother's song, the one about bones, about winter biting into earth, the slow, sad dirge of dying birds. I have listened to the mountain and its broken tongue, its rock slides and swollen streams, its animals haunted by silver ghosts of trees. Are you worried about the world's end? Poisoned rain, gun smoke and heat and storms? Have graves opened, spilling the dead into gullies and ravines? Have crows begun their wild black flight above burning corn, tearing high into the blazing eye of night? This poem spoke to me because I've had some anxieties this week about some of the terrible events that are happening around our world. Mass shootings and, oh, just things that hurt the soul deeply. But even as the crows begin their wild black flight and the graves open, there are so many mercies all around us. So many graces. We need only open ourselves and recognize them. I've been doing some experimental poetry lately. I was interested in learning Irish Gaelic, which of course would be a lifetime's project. So what I decided to do was bring in my interest in poetry to my interest in Irish Gaelic and just put together some poetry by going to the Irish English Dictionary and finding phrases and then shaping them into poems that will work with my own ideas. Now, I'm not able to read the poems in Irish myself, so I have asked my friend Jenny Neerussell, who lives in Dublin, to do some of the readings for me. And what you will hear are the poems read in Irish by her, and then in English by me. Here's Jenny reading the poem called The Conjuring in the Irish.
Triadoracht. Bin a tinta lasta fan na hi. Gníb uil cuacht chumbalach aga. Fáin yu solish. Ócha du chalanta a bhín sa sermonish. Tradisiún mishtach. Is das feh a mask cárde. Beitu fui vriacht evan gyol. Cuirfer an drama ardan dan chédor. Si him with a gyrkul. Daus oi se corn fipa. A mask nihe ella taplo gudarga Gara mialtach. Curry an cogus se an ruag an bian. Si si is alter bit is malat.
Conjuring. The fires will burn all night. A symbolically powerful act. A circle of light. The ceremony is a glittering occasion, mystical tradition. It's nice to be among friends. The music is utterly captivating. The play will have its stage premiere. We'll sit in a circle. He'll dance the hornpipe, among other things. He has glowing cheeks, a flirtatious smile. This medicine will magic the pain away. Sit down wherever you would like. I'll have some more of those poems for you in the future. I'd like to talk to you next about a journal, an unusual journal called Clade Song. As the editor describes it, Clade Song is a space dedicated to the literary examination of the animal world and all of its behavioral niches, from the bacterial mat to the predation of the auk, all of which impact and interrelate with the humanosphere. They are curious about how animal behavior shapes meaning for our own species, and how it informs moral minds, both anthropic and not. The journal is attentive to how the consciousness of an animal is defined and how systems of social justice are developed as a result of the definitions. At Clade Song, they are interested in the evolution of poetry from the phoneme outwards, from raw exclamatory yelping to the insect hymns sung to enshrine the concrete and the knots. The drive to the herd found in individual expression, fusion of eye and ear and mind. The editors believe writing of necessity must evolve at all points, from syntax to the kinds of interactive changes that take place between an animal writer and its environment. We promote a deep ecology, he says, which accepts poetry's resistance to the paradigm of use value. A more straightforward way to think about the space that is Clade Song is that the Lit Mag features writing about animals, with either animals at the center of the poem or a reference to an animal in the poem. Poems in Clade Song speak to the manner in which animal life inscribes human life. More technically, Clade Song was seen as a space where these poems could be supplemented with a sonic aspect, either through reading the poems aloud with a single voice or with some sort of musical or acoustic supplement, thus adding to the way that animal vocalizations, in this case human or perhaps other, enhance the experience of the poem as a spoken, chanted, or sung artifact. So far, the editors tell us, most poets have chosen to simply read their poems. But the space was originally intended as a way for poets to explore other kinds of sonic representation of their poems. Most of the reluctance by poets to head in that direction in a more serious manner results from poets' general lack of familiarity with sound editing software. Hopefully, Clade's song will encourage other poets to see poems as candidates for musical accompaniment, such as in the manner of German Lieder or art songs from other linguistic traditions, where poems are routinely set to music and are embraced by the culture at large. The relative scarcity of such work in the English-speaking countries is another reason for the development of Clade's song. While certainly other non-animalistic subject matter could be the target for such a musical treatment, it is our hope, says Tim Call, that poems and songs that include such subject matter will hearken a new romanticism or an old nativism. We should all be singing to animals for guidance, for mercy, for pleasure, whatever the case may be. Clade's song is edited by Tim Call and Joshua McKinney. Tim is the author of Possessing Yourself, published by WordTech in 2009, and The Century of Travel, which is forthcoming from WordTech. He has translated German poet Rolf Hoff's, Austrian avant-gardist Friedrich Mehrocker, Brazilian poets Lido Ivo, Marley de Oliveira, Carlos Drummond de Andrade, and others, and the poems of José Saramago. He is the events coordinator at the Sacramento Poetry Center. Originally, he was a researcher in a molecular biology lab at the Howard Hughes Medical Institute at the University of Michigan. But now he appears as Victor Schnickelfritz at the poetry and poetics blog, The Great American Pinup, and poetry and video blog, Line Break Studios. His co-editor, Joshua McKinney, is the author of Saunter, published by University of Georgia Press, 2002. The Novice Mourner by Bear Star Press, 2005. And Mad Cursive, published by Wordcraft of Oregon, 2012. As well as two poetry chapbooks, Saunter, from Primitive Publications, 1998. And Permutations of the Gallery from Pavement Saw Press, 1996. His work has appeared widely in such journals as American Letters and Commentary, Boulevard, Colorado Review, Denver Quarterly, Kenyon Review, New American Writing, Volt, and many others. Other awards include the Dickinson Poetry Prize and a Gertrude Stein Award for Innovative American Poetry. He teaches poetry writing and literature at California State University in Sacramento. Next, I'm going to read my poem published in Clade's song called A Roaring Lion. This is from my collection called Earth Gospel. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil as a roaring lion walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. A French composer from the 12th century named Léonin helped to create the Magnus Liber Organi, a collection of music intended to celebrate polyphony, many voices, many parts, in harmony. The earth is composed of polyphonic music, among them lines of lion litanies. Memorize them. A liturgy for Panthera Leo, his tawny belly and his low, slow approach on the savanna and grassland or through the bush because he is king and shaman scavenger with tufted tail. He is Moses of the burning bush, an apex predator, nocturnal. He meditates 20 hours a day on the great silence of being before the roar. a lion's music, a carnival of sound beyond the roar of reserve, park, zoo, circus, and safari, the wild kingdom beyond the definition of safe and unsafe, cruel or kind. In sub-Saharan Africa or in India, Gir Forest, where the heartbeat and drumbeat and incense are heavy. A social animal, he can be heard from 5 miles away by animals whose hearing is keen and who knows his reputation for sound defeat. At the revelation, when the fifth trumpet is blown, gold-faced locusts will come forth with hair like women and lion's teeth. Behold the lion and the lion-hearted. Pride, live in it, they say. Make it a virtue. Hunt, fight, mate, that is all. The cave lions at Chauvet move to the left, faces eager and intent. Growl to say it and say it loud. This is the way of prophets and music directors who say forte, pianissimo, grande. Secure your survival. Know how to escape. Rely on your memory. Seek buffalo and bring it down. Bite deeply, love deeply. Scowl and prowl. Be thirsty to the core and drink in loud laps. Shake your lovely mane. Be proud and vain. There is no need to explain. And the lion shall lie down with the lamb, but only in heaven, not in this life, not on your life, not while he is hungry. The one who would lie down with a lion best grow sharp claws and a bold appetite. A carnal carnivore, a feline femme fatale who opens herself to his world and brings him food. She stalks, then rushes toward her prey, and in one leap the game is over, the clutch, the blessed asphyxiation. They too rub their heads together and roll together. Sekhmet, Egyptian goddess, a solar deity depicted as lioness, formed the desert from her breath and drank the Nile. She protected the pharaohs and was herself a fierce warrior and hunter, leading armies into war. Her dress, her robes were the color of bright blood from a fresh kill, and across each breast a leonine motif. One before whom evil trembles. Lady of slaughter, she who mauls. It was not wise to make the lady angry, and so to appease her, the people performed rituals in temples with many statues of her. Jesus went out like a lamb, but he is coming back the lion of Judah. The earth loves her lion. She lifts him up in stately trees from which he can see all that is his in the remarkable kingdom of many voices. I'll share another one from Clade Song. This is a poem by Susan Kelly DeWitt. Susan is the author of Spider Season, published by Cold River Press in 2016. The Fortunate Islands, Merrick Press, 2008. As well as a number of previous small press and online collections. Her work has also appeared in many anthologies, including, she's especially happy to say, The American Entomologist Poet's Guide to the Orders of Insects, and in print and online journals at home and abroad. She is currently a member of the National Book Critics Circle and the Northern California Book Reviewers Association. For more information, please visit her website at www.susankelly-dewitt.com. The poem I'm sharing today by Susan is called I Ordered a Dragonfly. I ordered a dragonfly to take flight. I launched a cliff swallow like a paper airplane out over the river, and I commanded them to find the blue boat that carried my father away one November. The boat that bore my mother with her paralyzed left side to the mouth of the sea. The dragonfly refused. The cliff swallow circled back to his perch in a willow, as if they both knew the boat was made of ghost wood, sealed with ghost wax. Okay, I have another special treat for you, a reading by my friend, Claire Chaitin. She's going to read for us a poem called Benediction by Donald Jeffrey Hayes.
Benediction by Donald Jeffrey Hayes. Not with my hands, but with my heart, I bless you. May peace forever dwell within your breast. May truth's white light move with you and possess you. And may your thoughts and words wear her bright crest. May time move down its endless path of beauty, conscious of you, and better for your being. Spring after spring arrays itself in splendor, seeking the favors of your senescent seeing. May hills lean towards you, hills and windswept mountains, and trees be happy that have seen you pass, your eyes dark kinsmen to the stars above you, your feet remembered by the blades of grass.
So beautiful. All right, let me read a couple of short poems to you that I've written this week in response to paintings. This first one's called Wise Fox. I seek your counsel, sir, as by your side I stroke your fine red fur, and long to hear the truth you speak, though you do not speak in words, but sounds and looks and silent turns toward the path where I must go. I knew before I came to learn that you, wise one, would know. This one's called I'll Read to You, and it's in response to a painting of an old couple, a woman sitting with her glasses up above her head and an old man reading to her from a large book. The poem is called I'll Read to You. I'll read to you, my darling, when your eyes have grown too dim, though mine be scarcely brighter. I'll read to you the tales of old, of ships sunk down and hidden gems, of warrior men and tribal fighters, of wishing wells and magic lamps, of beggars, hobos, thieves, and tramps, tales to make your burdens lighter. I'll paint you life when we were young. I'll loose again your tender tongue, and we will sing ourselves to sleep before, old girl, the dark grows deep. Now, I'd like to read a few poems from my friends in that Curious Love of Green. This is a poem by the same young woman who read the Irish version of my poem, The Conjuring, earlier. and her name is Jenny Nee Russell. Jenny is a yoga instructor, travels around, but sometimes has a few minutes to drop a few lines into the salon. And this one is called "There Is Light in These Things Too." There is light in these things too, don't you see? Light in the looming danger, light in the lonesome wandering, light in the thoughts you thought would never be anything but gray. The light, your light, is given safe passage when you choose to let it shine, releasing resistance, repeated persistence, turning all the corners and following where the light shines brightest, unblocking the lungs of asthmatic thoughts with a breath so expansive that following frogs into a stranger's front porch turns it into a new friend's garden. We forgot about the frog, just like we forget about the light. But it's there. It burns quietly, unassuming, till something or someone shakes it up. Whether good or bad, your light is your guide, your passion, your energy. Wherever it goes, so do you. I'd like to read something now from the blog of my friend Karen Edmondson Bims. This particular post from her blog called Where Karen Goes is called 30 Days of Thanks. And since it's November, this seems perfect for us to read from today. Believe it or not, everyone has challenges. Some rise to them, some whine through them, and some run from them entirely. The problem with whining and running is that nothing changes. The same challenges show up over and over until we figure out how to master them. Have you ever noticed that? I think that is especially true during the holidays. We envision a perfect holiday, and then we look at our finances, our home, or our relationships, and realize perfection is out of reach, and that sends us spiraling downward emotionally. No one is challenge-free, but how we approach the challenge can be the difference between a holiday season of peace, joy, and thanks, and one of stress and angst. Sometimes our greatest gifts come from challenges we face and show up as compassion and gratitude later. Here are some ways to give thanks this holiday season. First, take care of yourself. Listen up. Give thanks for a shower. Be grateful enough for water to drink and healthy food to eat. Meditate. Listen to happy music. Perform an act of kindness. Become a gracious receiver. Indulge in a guilty pleasure. Be the change you want to see in the world. Stop being offended and taking things personally. Live differently. Take the focus off of what you have to do and put it on who and how you want to be. I hope you find peace, joy, love, and a reason to give thanks every day of this season. Those are just some of the thoughts from Where Karen Goes. You can purchase her book called Happiest Holidays on Amazon. It's Karen Edmondson Bims. You can also find her online at wherekarengoes.com. Let's have a poem, another poem from my Earth Gospel collection. It's called Camel, Necessary. I follow the religion of love. Whatever way love's camels take, that is my religion and my faith. Mujahideen Ibn Arabi. Genus Camelus, skinny-legged, long-necked, even-toed bearer of blankets and heavy human beings, he doesn't break a sweat. Admire his fatty humps, trying to get through a needle yet. The undulate with a comedic face spits and grumps. Watch its cheeks for a threat. They swell when their owner protests in regurgitation what it finds in agitation. This much for camel education. Boast one type, the dromedary. One hump, domesticated, termed Arabian, living in North Africa and in the Middle East. Through the desert goes the beast, beneath a Bedouin pilgrim who wants nothing more than a car, except perhaps to find God in a desert station, which requires extra patience to find his true location. Camel meets God at an oasis on vacation. This mammal is known for endurance. It is at home in a harsh, arid environment, walking 20 miles a day in relative ease, as fast as a horse, without water or food for long periods of time, a kind of spiritual fast. The size of its hump changes depending on its level of nutrition. The fat lasts for 30 days or more. We do not depend upon the camel only for a ride. We use its hide, its milk, its meat for gruel, and even its poop for fuel, but the camel is no fool. Matthew says that John the Baptist wore camel's hair garments with a leathern girdle about his loins and ate locust and wild honey. To camel, the desert is fundamental, but this does not mean he has to be happy about it. He makes a constant quarrel with sand and grit. A special membrane makes his eye fit for sandstorms, but still lets in enough light to travel by. He is further aided by a double set of eyelashes and a nose he can close by drawing in his nostrils. His heavy, broad feet, calloused, expand and contract to suit the path he takes. The camel doesn't make mistakes. There is no stiffness like that which comes from riding on a camel for the first time for hours. The descending virgin pilgrim moves gingerly, remembering that Jacob too fought with the angel and forever after walked with a limp. Camel type 2, Bactrian, two-humped, some domesticated and some wild, nomad. In the Gobi Desert and in Mongolia, 1,000 furry Bactrian camels the color of Turkish tobacco raise their split lips to spit. In the freezing temperatures of Mongolian winter, camels grow an extra woolly fur, which they shed in summer heat. In Australia lives a feral group of dromedaries, aloft, friend to lizards. I'm going to read now from my nonfiction book, Same Moon Shining. This is part 5. If you missed the first 4 parts, you can listen to the archives at the radio station, spiritplantsradio.com. Look under the DJ shows. It's Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara, and the archives are provided there, along with a playlist for each show. This is part 5 called Under My Feet. And at the beginning, I have a quote from Henrik Ibsen's play, A Doll's House. When I lost you, it was as if all the solid ground dissolved from under my feet. Look at me. I'm a half-drowned man now, hanging on to a wreck. Today I found a piece of sheet music at a rummage sale. Tarantella in E minor, piano solo, by Hal Perrin. Like so much else, it was timely because the Tarantella dance is a key feature of a play by Henrik Ibsen, involving a woman named Nora who leaves her family behind. She does so because she has discovered that her husband does not truly love her. He loves her only as long as she lives the way he wants her to, as the doll in the house, the mother and wife who follows societal standards. Although she has sacrificed much for him, he is not the hero she was certain he would be for her. The play was scandalous when it came out. To make such a woman a kind of heroine? To allow her to speak for herself and to make sense? To think that a woman has a right to exist outside of her husband and children? The Tarantella dance, performed earlier in the play at her husband's request, shows Nora at her most sexual, her most liberated in physical form. Her husband is entirely enchanted by her in the costume. But after all, at this point he believes he owns her, and therefore her wildness is no threat. It is only when she decides to leave him after he has been incredibly cruel that he feels the extent of his loss. The ground he has felt was solid dissolves from under his feet. When Alma, my adoptive grandmother, left her husband and my father in 1955 and ran away with her brother-in-law, we may suppose it was for no grand reason such as Nora's. Maybe she made no great personal sacrifice previously. She had not been terribly disappointed by her husband, perhaps. She was no feminist symbol chosen by a playwright to examine marriage as a troubled institution. Maybe. But what do we know of her personal sacrifices, really? How much does anyone know about someone else's marriage? The one thing we do know is that my father, caught in the middle, got hurt, and that Clinton went looking for his wife. She must have been worth something to him. He must have loved her. He never said a bad word about her to my father. It is not the business of this writing to defend or excuse Alma, only to seek understanding for women and for people in general who run away from their responsible, decent, ordinary lives. At any rate, there is more to the story, for you see, Alma came back home. The wild dance that she did with Albert did not go exactly as planned. I'll read part 6 for you in December. How about that? It's about time to wrap things up for today. I'm glad you've met with me. I hope that you will consider sending me some of your own writings. You can send them to me at Facebook, TamaraMiles.poet, or at Twitter through direct message. It's TamaraMilesSC, which stands for South Carolina. You could also email me at TamaraMilesSC@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. And it's possible that through the app called Anchor, we could even have you record your own writing and I could share it on the show. So get in touch with me. Let me hear from you. And thank you for being with me today. Okay, I have about 10 minutes left on the show, and I would love to return to some of the Irish Gaelic poems, the experimental poems that I'm writing. And hear Jenny read another one of those. So I'll have her read the poem called Hush in Irish Gaelic, and then I will follow that with a reading of the poem in English as I did before.
Cúnic. Chuama ar mus, chuir ma shrian la mahanga. Bhí scamal ag snávló trasna na spéide. Bhí turas álana an trasna na tíra. Bhí cúl ar ma gimacht. Bhí man an crus sean éirí an bh amach, tríd cuairach, glas an na barcana. Chuína mé ar an rud a dearach ma chean múntúr. Go trasna nara agus tú an fire glas. Cairach dar miúta sóliachta. Come and escape, near a rudder bit ella on the waiting in of. Not clushum druck uckle hain fui, ni calling er or nigh.
Hush. I got on the bus. I held my tongue. Clouds were drifting across the sky. We had a lovely drive across the country. I felt sad at leaving. I could make out the figure of an old man. A drove of sheep, the greenness of the fields. I called to mind what my old teacher used to say. Cross when you see the green man, a mythic figure. I beg your pardon. There was nothing more I could do. I won't hear a word against him. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. I've had so many precious experiences that were at once painful and lovely. When we are brave, when we spread our wings, it is always memorable. A while back, I was exploring at a local antique and thrift store when I found some framed drawings of the historic Kitty Hawk flights. I couldn't resist them, and when I brought them home and hung them on the wall, I knew they would have to have at least one poem to keep them company. This is the poem that came out of that experience. It's called Kitty Hawk, 1903, and it was published in the 40th anniversary edition of River's Edge, a journal of art and literature published since 1977 by the Creative Writing Program at the University of Texas, Rio Grande. Its editor is Philip Zwirling, and the poetry editor is Jose Antonio Rodriguez. Its publication is supported by private donations, and if you can support this important journal with your donations, please visit give.utrgv.edu/donate now, or get in touch with someone via email at riversedge@utrgv.edu. Here's my poem, Kitty Hawk. As boys, the box shop brothers flew their kites and clutched at guiding strings. They saw the gathering wind had blind ambitions and witnessed, too, a band of birds climb toward cold clouds with ease, as if the sky had called their names. Then, in the dreams that come to boys, the names they heard above were theirs. Wilbur wrote of his obsession as disease. Always, first, a dream is met with some suspicion, both within the self and out. What crafted wings could bear the two to clouds? Their parents winked. Others must have laughed out loud, offering nothing but derision. Now, in December, to the outer banks they came, past the 700th glide, and for 12 seconds rose on powered wings because they were more brave than proud and sought true freedom more than fame. In the last few minutes of the show, I'd like to share some information about one of my friends on Twitter. His name is Mark Gordon, and he has a wonderful book out. It's called The Snail's Castle. And It is contemporary literary fiction at its finest. It introduces Jungian theories about psychological individuation, gives voice to the bourgeois aspirations of immigrant Jews, and makes ping-pong matches seem as riveting as NCAA March Madness college basketball games. There is a refreshing intimacy about the characters, which draws the reader inexorably into the mix. At 296 pages, The Snail's Castle is a pleasure to read. This is a no-brainer. 5 stars. I'm reading from the review of Mark's book, The Snail's Castle, at his website, which is markgordonauthor.com/The Snail's Castle. Do pick up Mark's book. He's a wonderful writer and a wonderful poet. Let me read you a couple of Mark's poems. They're short poems called Tanka, 5 lines, micro poetry. I bundle past another bundle in 20 below weather, summer eyes withdrawn. You can hear the cold snapping, its fingers preparing for the end of time. Oh, it's been fun, my friends, and I look forward to seeing you again soon in our virtual world at Where the Most Light Falls. Let's close out with a couple more poems by Mark Gordon. Summer toys sitting in the rain, the slides empty. A lone squirrel nibbles a broken nut. In the morning chill, the sun sketches the shadow of a man sitting on the shadow of a bench. And a poem by Alan Mitnick called It's Done. The rain and wind ended. It feels like God has turned off his mixer, finished his recipe that putting us in the oven at 375 degrees is all that's left. I wonder if I am a spice or perhaps batter that will rise. Or will I be left in the bowl or blades, unbaked and licked? Marvelous poem. Caught in the dark with a radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.